Hello, everyone. This is Reed Diamond. I play Daniel Whitehall, a.k.a. the Kraken, on Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and you are listening to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. Hail Hydra.
Welcome, one and all, to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. I'm your host, Joe Stuber. Things are about to get totally evil all up here in the lair today as I get set to welcome from Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Hydra agent Daniel Whitehall, the amazing actor Reed Diamond. He is my guest today. Spoiler alert, in real life, Reed is as nice as can be, completely opposite of his character. He is insanely wicked on S.H.I.E.L.D. We're going to have some fun talking about comic books. We are going to get that comic booky talk going in just a few moments. Lots of fun in store for everybody out there today. It's going to be a good one. Now, before we get to chatting with Reed, though, I want to let you know about a very cool event that's coming up here in my hometown, Columbus, Ohio, next month, and it runs all the way through the fall. Very cool. You got some time to do this. And as you'll hear in just a few minutes, Reed Diamond, he is a fan of Mad Magazine. I'm a fan of Mad Magazine. And if you are a fan of Mad Magazine and will be in the Ohio area between now and October, there is an exhibit you do not want to miss. It's taking place at the Billy Ireland Cartoon Library and Museum that is affiliated with The Ohio State University. The exhibit is called Artistically Mad, Seven Decades of Satire, and it runs from May 5th through October 21st. But on May 5th, there is an opening reception featuring presentations by legendary mad cartoonist Sergio Aragonés, collectors Glenn Bray and Grant Geisman, exhibit curator Brian Walker. You are going to be hearing from Brian on an upcoming episode of Comic Book Central, so stay tuned for that. Also, Mad editor Bill Morrison. Bill also co-founded Bongo Comics with Matt Groening, all the Simpsons comics, so that's pretty cool too. The press release states that that event on May 5th is free and open to the public. So if you are a fan of Mad Magazine, this is something you are going to want to check out. For more information, you can check out the website first and get everything you need to know there, cartoons.osu.edu. I will also put a link in the show notes for this episode at my website, comicbookcentral.net. Also, the show notes at blogtalkradio.com/comicbookcentral. You can find it there as well. And of course, stay tuned to Comic Book Central for more madness. I am going to bring you as much of this cool event as I can, so stay tuned. What I am bringing you today, however, my friends, is the man who menaced Agent Carter and the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Check this out, then I will be right back to talk comic books, bad guys, and the Marvel Universe with Reed Diamond. Born and raised in Brooklyn, New York, Reed attended schools in New York and North Carolina, and he went on to study acting at Juilliard. Early film roles include appearances in Memphis Belle, Clear and Present Danger, and Assassins, but he is best known for his three-year run on the TV hit Homicide, Life on the Street, as Detective Mike Kellerman. Now, Reed went on to make numerous feature film appearances, and he has been all over our TV screens in shows like Judging Amy, 24, Franklin and Bash, and Dollhouse, where he met the show's creator, Joss Whedon. Now, when Whedon and company launched the Marvel espionage show Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., comic book fanboy Reed got his dream job when he was cast as Season 2 bad guy, Hydra agent Daniel Whitehall. Now, in the comic books, Whitehall is a British agent who becomes a Hydra operative, the Kraken. But for the start of Season 2 of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., the writers took the character, made him German, and dropped him squarely into World War II to battle Agent Carter and the Howling Commandos as Werner Reinhardt.
Put it down. Down. These assets are now under the protection of the Strategic Scientific Reserve. They'll be relocated and hidden out of sight indefinitely, as will you.
Cut off one head. Two more shall grow on this place.
Then I guess we'll keep cutting them off.
Through some super cool comic booky plot twists, Reinhardt uncovered the secret to de-aging, and he returned to take on the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. in the 21st century as Daniel Whitehall.
I want us to work together.
I want you to become a valued member of our organization. Surrender, and you will find meaning. Surrender, and you will find release. Deep breath. Calm your mind. You know what's best. what's best is you comply. Compliance will be rewarded. Are you ready to comply, Agent 33?
My guest today, he is an incredibly talented actor. He has played the good guys. He's played the bad guys. You've seen him in Homicide, Dollhouse, Designated Survivor, and he has spanned the decades. Yes, he has, in the Marvel Universe, from the time of Captain America's origin to taking on the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Time to welcome in Reed Diamond. Reed, thank you so much for joining me today on Comic Book Central.
Wow, no, thank you. That guy sounds really interesting. I'd like to meet him. Wow, that was, thank you, Joe.
Look, as I mentioned to Rick Cosnett last week, you did the work. I just say what you did. I mean, it's easy. You did everything. Or should I say, Hail Hydra, Reinhardt. Hydra.
Yes. Yes. It's really funny. You know, that German accent. We should just dive right into this.
Go for it.
Because obviously we're here because of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Daniel Whitehall, because this is Comic Book Central. You know, the German accent was really funny because obviously, I know the Whedon family, and I'd first met Joss and Jed and Marissa when I did Dollhouse, when they invited me to do Dollhouse. And so before I was going to do the second season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., my agent called me over the summer, and he goes, look, Marissa and Jed, they've called. They're asking about your availability. They've got a character for you that they want you to play on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but they can't tell you about it. We have to get approved by ABC, blah, 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 blah. So I text and I email with Marissa and Jed. I'm like, oh, I'm so excited. I really want to be on the show. I was desperate to be on that show. And they go, yeah, we're trying to make it happen. We just can't tell you anything.
Let me interrupt one second. Like, because you're going to get to a question I want to get to, but you said, oh, I'm so excited. I'm so excited. You knew how big the Marvel Universe was, right? Like, you wanted to be in on this.
Oh my God! Yeah, of course. Okay. I mean, they were going off to do that. They were going off to do start that show while we were shooting Much Ado About Nothing that Joss was directing.
Right. Oh, okay.
Oh, and I was so jealous, and I just, you know, but I always play it very, very cool because I know in with Joss, if it's something that he thinks you're right for, he's just going to cast you. You don't have to. No, there's no pushing or prodding.
Audition.
Necessary.
You don't have to go in and read sides and yeah.
No, you're not going to go, hey, is there a part for me? You're not going to get down and beg and do some pathetic actor thing because you know that he's the giant brain. He's
a
genius.
But you got the enormity of it. That's kind of what I want to get. Us nerds because we want to know, like, did you even get what this was? So you got the enormity of it.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. I'm a huge, it's funny, I'm literally in the middle right now of the process of selling off my comic book collection.
Don't do it.
No, it's okay. All right, Joe, you and I could talk about this because I think you'll completely understand. So for 40 years, 40 years I've been carrying around my comic book collection. Uh-huh. And I amassed, a nice collection in the 70s when these books came out. And I have moved them from house to house, and I saved them. I don't know what because I was never going to read them because once they got bagged and boarded, they weren't ever going to be opened again, right?
You will. Look, I've gone through this. I've moved a few times, and I go, I'm never going to read. I read them.
Well, no, so you're good. So I held on to them and because I've basically got it's funny. I mean, half of them, and this goes back to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. because I was a huge collector of Nick Fury and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and starting from Strange Tales, right? So he was my guy because and I also was a huge collector of Sergeant Fury. But what would also happen, his first iteration. But what's so interesting is, especially with the Marvel stuff, is they would do reissues later on. So I would have the original copies, the original editions of the books from the 60s, and then whatever, they would reprint them and I could read those. But so I'm in the process of selling it all off right now, which has been fascinating to go through my collection and see what's going on. But
that's slightly painful for me. I did this. I did sell my comic book collection off at one time when I was 16 years old.
Right. Oh, no.
Right. Because girls aren't going to want to go out with some guy that's got comic books, right? And I sold all my Star Wars toys, all my action figures, my Millennium Falcon. I sold everything.
You have to wait.
Here's the punchline is I got married, and then my first anniversary present, my wife got me the Kenner Millennium Falcon because she knew that was the thing that I missed. I'm like, yep. That was it. That was, we did. So it's just a little painful for me to know that you are in the process of selling. So I'm sorry.
Well, you know, in fact, I don't even call it selling. I call it rehoming because here's the deal, Joe. It's they've been pristine. Literally, the bags were in worse condition than some of the books because they've been in the same bags for 40 years. And my mother smoked and I can see the little yellowing on the bags. So I got all new bags and boards and for every, you know, for the Bronze Age, the Silver Age, and the Golden Age, because I've got all those comics. But I'm rehoming them because I know they've sat in their dark little filing cabinet as they've moved from home to home with me. And I want someone to have them because I have all the books. I have the compendiums that have
trade paperbacks.
Exactly. All so right. I can read them that way. But now someone who really cares about them. But it's been interesting to see. I was amazed to really go through it again in detail and see what I had, because I had some really great books that I just bought as an 8-year-old or a 7-year-old from the newsstand.
Favorite book that you hit and you went, nope, keeping it.
You know, it's funny. Oh, geez. I'm so sorry. Anyway, that's my agent trying to call me, but it.
Oh, we will just. That's good. You're getting another job. No. That's totally cool. We can see you in something else very cool very soon.
Oh yeah, lots going on right now. Daddy's going to work, but it's funny because I sold my favorite book, and I remember it was my favorite book when I first got it, and I did finally sell it. But I'm glad I did. It was the first appearance of the Punisher in Amazing Spider-Man. and I remember when I first saw it, because the cover so attracted me as a kid. You know, it's yellow and there's
Ross
the Andrew. And you're seeing exactly, and you're seeing him through the crosshairs, and it was just I was so drawn to it. And but it paid for a dinner or a vacation. It was very nice. And but I don't know. I probably won't let go. It's weird. I may not let go of my Sergeant Fury and the Howling Commandos. All of those. But it's hard to say. I mean, I still have so many comics that I'm just going sort of piece by piece through my. I know this is so like inside baseball right now. I'm just going
That's
through
where we're at.
Piece by piece, and it's amazing what interested me and what I collected. And then I'm fascinated now too to come back into the world. Oh, gee, I am so. Totally I'm not cool. taking this phone call.
Good, just take it. I'll edit this part out.
Oh my! No, you leave it in. This is an actor's life.
I'll leave the first part in. Not this. Yeah. No, seriously, take it because it might be a really cool gig that we can break some news here.
It's gonna. Well, I can't. I'm sure I still won't be able to tell you. That's this. This brings me back to the whole world that we live in right now.
Yeah.
Is that you? Everything. Dollhouse was my first full-on. What I know we're going all over the place, but this is going to be great, Joe. We're going to have a great time because I love talking to you. It was my first watermark script and I understood on Dollhouse, you don't want that getting out into the internet, right. But now everything you do is top secret and you can't tell anyone until it's actually aired.
Done, aired and we see it.
But it's funny, you know, I had a moment, an emotional moment, one book I let go, and it was the first. Because most of my collection were things that I personally purchased on the day they came out, right?
Right.
But, and how old are you, Joe?
I'm 50. Now I'm 50.
Okay. So you and I are the same age.
Yep.
So you and I were 8 and 9, that was sort of the first blush of collecting comics as a thing really came about. And I grew up in New York City. And at the time when I first started collecting, there were only two comic book shops. There was one on the Upper East Side. There was one in the Village. And then as I really got into it, one opened up on the Upper West Side where I lived. So there were three comic book shops. And they were these sort of off-putting ivory towers that you would go into. And you couldn't touch anything. You couldn't look at anything. It used to be like what music stores used to be like before Guitar Center opened up. And I had certain things that I was fixated on, and the first comic that I paid a lot of money for, because I felt strongly about it. I was a huge Mad Magazine collector, and I loved Mad Magazine, and I bought issue number 16. And I remember at 9 or 10 years old, I saved up a lot of money, and I think probably it cost me $50 back in 1978.
Oh, as a 10-year-old, where did you get $50, man?
Well, I was very I grew up in New York City. I lived a block from Broadway, and every weekend my parents asked me, what do you want for Christmas? And I said, I'd like a shoe shine kit, please. And they were like, okay. And it was the '70s and they just let me. I would never let my daughter go up to the street at 8 years old and shine shoes all Saturday. But I shine shoes.
Oh, wow.
On Broadway, on 93rd and Street and Broadway, for many years. I would sell things for people on the street. I would play music on the street. I think at one point I sold caricatures. I would draw caricatures of people on the street as a kid. They were horrible. I'm sure all of my patrons were just humoring me or found it adorable that an 8-year-old.
But on some level, performing.
Always performing. Oh, right. No, I did. And it's so funny because you live in this very – now we live in a world where you have access to everything. You can see what things are. You know how to do things. I could have made a movie, right? I could have made a YouTube channel I was a child now. But then you didn't know. So I remember I'd seen a one-man band guy where one of his feet hits the bass drum and he has a tambourine and a kazoo. And I put clown makeup on myself and got a big oversized coat and I made myself a one-man band.
And mom and dad were okay with this. He was just hanging out.
Well, it was the 70s and they were part of the me generation. So they were just glad that I wasn't in their house. And I grew up in New York City in the nadir, in the bankrupt, in those dark, amazing eras of Scorsese movies. But I survived miraculously.
Apparently enough to drop $50 on a Mad magazine.
Exactly. Well, I think I know where I got that money from. I remember one of our neighbors on my floor, he saw my entrepreneurial spirit and he goes, I have a lot of things I want to sell. And if you sell them for me, I'll give you half. And I said, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I remember I made spreadsheets and I itemized everything and I said what they would be worth and I sold them. And I felt terrible about this, but I did rectify it. I sold my doorman a camera. And I remember I sold him a camera for $20 and my doorman came back. He says, it doesn't work. I said, no returns. I felt really guilty. He never forgave me for a while. And then I remember when I first got my first acting gig, I had some money and I just felt guilty. And I just said, hey, I paid him back the money plus interest. I'm so sorry. I was kind of a jerky Donald Trump at 8 years old, 9 years old. And here's your money back plus interest. So I just finally sold this. Coming back to I finally sold the first comic book that I collected and bought and actually paid big money for. And 50 is what I remember, but obviously memory is a very tricky sense.
Right.
But that one did, it hit me. I remember I had a flash this morning. I just shipped it off yesterday. And
is this the Jack Davis cover of a newspaper?
Oh, look at you. Look at you with your handy interweb. Yes, it is. I had a moment. I remember seeing where it hung in the shop. And I remember that shop. It was on the Upper East Side and they really treated you terribly, especially if you were a child. And it really, it's like the character from The Simpsons, right?
Right.
They've become much more egalitarian. Everything's become much more egalitarian now. I've gone back to comic book shops for the first time in 40 years to get bags and boards and things like that. And everyone's delightful and lovely and they're warm, friendly places. And it's inspired me to get back into books because it was a very off-putting environment, but that might have just been the world in the 70s and 80s. My memory of stores in New York was always like, why are you in here?
I'm sure it was a different vibe back then. And then once the collectible aspect came in, I mean, there's still comic book guys. I mean, there's a reason that Simpson's character exists.
Yeah.
I think that they're more open to, like everybody loves comic books now. So they can bring them in. But back in the day, it was a very niche, very niche.
But so to bring this back to the beginning question, did I understand the magnitude of this? Yes,
I was. I think you got it. You got your cred. You've earned your cred on this show.
Well, the other thing is, not only I'm a Marvel guy, but I was a bad guy. All my favorite Marvel characters, besides Nick Fury, because I was sort of into World War II, because it was were all bad guys.
Yeah,
you know, Red Skull and Doctor Doom, and it's interesting because. My early, my father worked at a local television station in New York City. So if there was some sort of publicity event, he might often get an invitation. And I got an he got an invitation, and he brought me to the release party of Bring on the Bad Guys. Are you familiar with that book?
This is the Stan Lee. Yeah. This,
so what happened?
Right.
So,
this was so an event with Stan. Stan was at the event, right?
I met Stan Lee, and I met I met everybody.
Yeah.
And,
this was like the hardback book devoted to all like the villains of the Marvel Universe.
Yes, because they came out with Origins and then Son of Origins.
Right.
And then the third book that they released was Bring on the Bad Guys. And it had Magneto and Red Skull and Dr. Doom and et cetera. And I got to go to this event. And it was the most amazing thing because it was in some penthouse in some Mad Men office building in New York City. And they brought hot dog carts in there. And I met Scott Baio because he'd just done Bugsy Malone. And he was only a couple of years older than me. I had a broken arm and he signed my cast, which was really exciting. I was like, you're Bugsy Malone, sign my cast. And I had all the artists were there. And they were doing, you could request any character. I was such a schmuck too, because I went to John Romita, and this wasn't his character, but my favorite character at that moment, at that very day, because I'm a child, was Daredevil. And I said, "Will you draw me Daredevil?" And it wasn't his guy, but he drew me a beautiful Daredevil, and I have it. But
for him, probably pretty cool because he didn't get to do that often. I mean, he's probably like, "Yeah, cool, I'll do a Daredevil." Yeah,
he was so sweet. They were all so sweet. But talking about the magnitude of understanding this, being on this show, the Marvelverse was my verse, and it still is. I mean, I think there's something more human about it. I mean, I collected a bunch of DC stuff, but there's something about Marvel and the bad guys always appealed to me. They were always my favorite characters in the books. So my agent calls and he says, and this is because you asked about the German, you did a German accent, and he goes, it's going to happen. And I talked to Marissa and Jed. They go, it's going to happen. We can't tell you about it, but we have to get approved by ABC. But it's going to happen. It's going to happen. It's going to happen. 3 weeks go by. I get a call. It's going to happen. It's happening. Marissa calls me. Jed calls me. Congratulations. You're doing the show. We're so excited to have you. You're playing Daniel Whitehall. I don't know if you know him from the world. He's also the Kraken. And can you do a German accent? The job starts in one day. And so, as all actors do, I said, can I do a German accent? Of course I can do a German accent. And I huddled in my little, at my desk, and I sort of figured out, okay. You know, there's
doesn't
not
that go back to your improv, though? Like,
yes.
You never say no?
Well, you never say no, but also, I mean, you know you can do it, and it sounds exciting. And
of course right, yeah.
Of course you can. And so I sort of tried to figure out, okay, where is he from? And I immediately went on, now that we have this magical computer box in front of us, and I went on, and I started looking at different accents and different actors who had done them, and I said, oh, I don't think these are right. I don't want to do an actor's accent. And then I figured, oh, well, he's of a certain class and he's probably from a certain region. So there's a great database. And I found a voice from there. And I was on my way driving. I was in the car, in the back of a town car, on my way to Comic-Con in San Diego to promote Wayward Pines, and listening to the tapes of a person from where I thought this character should be from in Germany doing their German accent. And then luckily they provided me someone saying my lines in a German accent. And a day later, I was on set doing it, and it was so exciting. I've mentioned this before, but I mean, we obviously hold a deep reverence for this world and for these characters. And I knew the augustness of this opportunity. And
oh, okay, look, I got to jump in because you're right where I want to be, and. I want to get there. I do like to get a little bit of the background.
Let's do it. Yeah,
on the person on the show.
Okay.
But you
go, no, sorry.
You were ready to so jump on this one question that I want to pounce on, and you were right at all that right. moment. I'd want to save that because I want to kind of get a little bit of background coming into this because you
please.
Mentioned the building blocks like as a kid. Okay, so you love the we got that. You got the cred. Dad was working at WWOR.
Right. WOR back then.
WOR back then, yeah.
Yeah.
On the Joe Franklin Show.
Right.
Which I loved as a kid.
Yeah.
I love Joe Franklin because that's when talk shows were talk shows. Was that the spark of TV performance? Like, was that the spark, the genesis of this?
It wasn't. Okay. I think, but it wasn't the spark. But what I always say is that I didn't grow up in a house where anyone was going to say choosing acting as a profession is a stupid idea or a crazy idea or an outlandish idea. So I grew up in that world. I think I grew up in New York in the 70s and the early 80s and went to the theater, and I was exposed to all that, those great movies at that time. And I knew from an early age, it's interesting. I wrote, and I don't know if it's interesting. That's a verbal tick. It's not that interesting, but I remember I was at PS 84 in third grade and they had you write your biography, and there was not much to write when you're 8 years old. And so I wrote an additional chapter, chapter 4, called The Future. And I still have this biography. And I wrote, in the future, I will have a van, because vans were very hip in the 70s. And I'd drawn a picture of thumbs up, and I go, A, the Fonz, which you'll get, the Fonz reference. And then I turn the page, and I'd drawn a picture of myself on a stage with floodlights in sort of some sort of Elizabethan garb. And I said, and I will be an actor. And so I always knew.
But what was it like? Did you see something on TV or in a movie or in a film that's a thing, and I can do that thing? Do you remember anything that just jumped out at you that you went, oh, I got to do that?
I think it's a mixture of things. I think all of those things. I remember seeing Shakespeare in the Park, and I remember my first Broadway play and just wanting to be up there. And I grew up in a household too, where I was exposed to tons of musical theater. And I would just sit and listen to those, looking at the covers of the albums and listen to Funny Girl and listen to every Stephen Sondheim musical. And I remember when I went to see the first cast of Sweeney Todd, and I it was such a rich time to be, a young person and go to the theater. I saw so many incredible life-changing experiences, and in the theater and in the movies too. I mean, you're watching Scorsese movies, which I shouldn't have been watching. And Woody,
Mom and Dad
Woody,
know about these or not?
No, they're like I say, this was the me generation. They just didn't care. I remember them taking me to Saturday Night Fever and just covering my eyes during the gang rape scene. But we were there. Right.
Yeah, so, this was before the PG version came out.
I don't even know about that version.
It was the following year it came out. They did an edited PG version.
God bless you, Joe, for knowing that. So, but
apparently, Mom and Dad didn't care.
They didn't care. They were like, "We're going to the movies. You're coming." But
I did. It was the same thing. My sister would take me to movies. She took me to Blackula. I remember one time covered my eyes.
Yeah, that's what
it was. Yeah, it's like, I'm not. Look, I'm gonna babysit you. I'm gonna babysit you in the theater.
No one was worried about preserving her innocence, but. It was a multitude of things that drew me to it. And I think also at the same time, I wanted to be so many things that I thought, well, I can just play all of them if I become an actor. And I don't spend too much time sort of examining my motivations, but I think you just know what you're built to do. And it's always just filled me up, and it's been exciting to pretend and be other people. And I also think too, you know, we've alluded to life in New York City in the 70s and 80s, and there was part of me that wanted to be someone else and wanted to be a superhero. I remember I lived in this, at the time, my neighborhood was quite dangerous, and I got mugged all the time. And I had a 6-block walk to my public school, and it was harrowing at times. And I remember inventing my first superhero because I wanted to draw comics. I remember drawing my own comics, and I created this character because I had access to a thesaurus. And I created this character called Robust Boy, because I'd looked for synonyms for strong, and I found robust and robust boy. And I'd come up with his powers. If you remember that Stretch Armstrong doll, that Stretch Armstrong doll was soft if you pulled him, but if you punched him, he was super hard. And I was I had some sort of metal had infused my body. And so if you just touched me softly, I was soft. But if you brought any force towards me, I was incredibly hard. And so I created this character, Robust Boy. And then I started to fantasize that I was Robust Boy. And I remember telling my next door neighbor, that I was actually a superhero. And at night I dressed up as a superhero and fought crime, because that was my fantasy, because it was a scary, unsafe time. And I wanted to feel safe, and I wanted to make the world safe for other people. And I remember he goes, "No, really?" I go, "Yeah, I'll put my costume on." And I put on my sweatsuit, my green sweatsuit. I remember this vividly. I put on my green sweatsuit and my red rain boots and a cape. Man. And
you went next level.
I went next level. Yeah. And then I went over to his house and they all laughed at me. They laughed. But that's also a good crucible for being an actor, because.
Well, that's exactly my thought, was that isn't that somebody who's destined to become an actor?
I think so. What,
there's nothing else you could have done.
There's nothing else I could have done. And also, you know, one of the first things that really attracted me to acting was that you could be foolish and be lauded for it. And that appealed to me, because I've played a lot of characters who are cool and confident and smart and together and strong and tough and all of these different qualities that aren't really me. And that's why sometimes they're fun to play. That's why bad guys are really fun to play, because they have a social contract that I would never adopt. And it's really fun to go into that world. So yeah, I think they're all tied together.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah, you were destined for it. I got to ask you about some of these roles before we jump back into Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
Okay, spoiler alert. For anybody that's listening to this right now that is a designated Survivor fan, spoiler alert, we're going to tell, they've had plenty of warning, right?
Yeah, they've had tons of warning.
Okay,
yeah, fair warning.
Fair warning. So if you're not caught up, push pause, go catch up, and then come back. Okay, that's plenty of warning. Not unlike my guest last week, Rick Cosnett, who I said to him, "You die spectacularly on our television screens."
Yes.
You have a way of doing this. Are you cool with it? Do you like those, or do you like the characters that just kind of, like, because your character in Homicide, he made it to the end, right?
Joe, I die all the time, right?
Okay. Your character didn't die in Homicide, though, did he?
No, he lived.
Because that's the guy you think would die of all these characters.
No, and it's so funny because I once made a cartoon that I posted it on Twitter of a gravestone with all the names of all the characters that I'd played who passed away. And the problem is, if you play bad guys, you're going to die, right?
Yeah,
and
fair
enough. So bad guys are fun. They die. But I remember when I started Designated Survivor, and it's a joke in my house, because my daughter's getting into the family business, and she's been playing bad guys. She just played Scar in a musical version of Lion King that they were doing here where we live.
Yeah,
and she goes, "I'm like, Dad, I love to play the bad guys." But I said, "Hey, you know, the problem with the bad guys is the bad guys are guaranteed to die." And it's great creatively, not so good for your bank account. Yeah. And so when we on Designated
or if you
Survivor,
want to work with Michael J. Fox.
If you want to work with Mike, exactly. So so when we're doing Designated Survivor, when I first started on the show, I assume that, because I don't know, you've talked to a billion actors, so you know, oftentimes they don't know, and definitely they don't tell you what's going to happen with your character.
Especially on these shows that just continue episode to episode.
And they don't have an idea half the time. But I remember going to the creator of Designated Survivor, and I go, "Hey, am I a good guy or a bad guy?" And I go, "I'm not going to tell, you know, you don't tell me any state secrets, but can you just, are you a good guy or a bad guy?" And he gave me a little koan, and he said, "Well, my thoughts, if you seem like a bad guy, then you're probably a good guy." And I go, "Great, good guy." And then I finally became a good guy, and I go, "Great, good guy, job security.
Nope.
And, no, because also sometimes then they were like, "Well, everyone likes you so much, it'll be really shocking if you die."
Mm-hmm.
So I also play those characters on Bones or a couple of the shows where I
wasn't
play the
it
guy.
Like, wasn't it like one of the series you did, like the very first episode? Like the
yes,
like they like was, you were the main cast member,
mm-hmm,
and they killed you off in the first episode
for the Shield, not Agents of Shield, but the Shield.
The Shield, right.
Exactly. Yeah. So they go, "Hey, you're that was the beginning of that whole thing where you're going to kill somebody who thinks going to live." And now that's de rigueur, right? That's the Game of Thrones. No one's safe.
Right. Yeah, that's like you say, it's spectacular on screen, but
yes,
but certainly memorable. Okay, so we're getting into comic books now.
Okay.
But before we get to Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., some of our listeners may or may not know that was not your first venture into the Marvel Universe. Am I correct in that?
Oh, are you? Oh, you went on the IMDb. Okay, so this is a very. So, are you talking about Incredible Hulk?
Okay, well, no. So let's do that.
No.
Is that that's a different guy, right?
That's a different guy.
Yeah,
What were you going to go into?
I think you did an Oscar Wilde play in the Marvel Universe. Did you or did you not?
Oh yes, you're very good. Was that the second Spider-Man?
Spider-Man
movie?
2. Here's the thing. Yes. Full disclosure. I did have to do a little digging because I'm looking at this going Algernon. Why? Yeah. I do not remember the character of Algernon in Spider-Man 2. And then I realized you're the dude on stage with Mary Jane Watson in the play.
When
Peter, he couldn't go and then he could go. And so, okay. Before we get to Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which we are going to get to, how did you get involved in the world of Spider-Man and Sam Raimi and Tobey Maguire and Kirsten Dunst and all that good
stuff? That's a funny actor's journey story. So it was a low point in my representation
history. I'm so sorry.
No, it's good. Because I've definitely transcended that. And these anecdotes are funny. I've had a long and continuing career. So I was at... I'm off of Homicide. I've switched agents. This agent really sucks. And she goes, I have an audition for you for Spider-Man. And I want to be in Spider-Man. And and that was sort of the beginning of the resurgence of the movies. And I went in and to do a scene from The Importance of Being Earnest. Mm-hmm. And so I did it. And I remember I'm driving across the country with my wife. We're on our way to another location for another show or something. And they call and they go, they need you in New York right now. I'm like, I'm not going. And they go, well, these are sundry. But anyway, so I get the part to play. Yeah. To do the play within the play in Spider-Man. Yes, it was lovely. It was Sam Raimi could not have been more charming and more lovely and sweeter. But it was an inauspicious entree into the Marvel world, albeit the Sony Marvel world, which is a slightly different one.
Yes.
It's on my IMDb.
It's on the resume. It's on the credit. Who knows? Maybe we'll see you squaring off against Spider-Man again.
Yes, exactly.
Who knows? Who knows? The Marvel Universe. Nobody's ever dead, right?
No.
Nobody's ever dead.
Well, that was the thing, on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., I was very, we'll get there again, but before we get, I remember when I had to shoot my scene where I got killed, and I was a little bummed, because I was just sort of, I felt like I was hitting my stride, and I was all over, and I remember the camera operator turned to me, goes, you'll be back, and I've been back twice since I've died, which has been delightful.
Even the cast knows at that point, we know nobody dies in the Marvel Universe. Let's get to it. You got me there. Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Werner Reinhardt, a.k.a. Daniel Whitehall. I love the fact that you introduce yourself as the Kraken. can we jump 20 questions ahead?
Do we need to know
is this a thing? Because the character on the show is not the character in the comics, but it could be.
It was a funny thing because we started talking about learning the accent. And I remember Jed was saying to me on the phone when they said, you have the part and you have to learn an accent in a day. Sorry, it's my manager calling again.
I'm sorry. If I cost you a job, I'm so sorry. Up.
No, Joe, you're getting me more jobs. Because they only go. You. One thing you need to know about this town is if you don't answer the phone, man, more stuff happens. People's brains melt.
He's not picking up his phone. What's going on, man? He thinks he's too big. He's too big. We got to get him now before he's too hot.
I love it. No, so I remember Jed said in the comic that the Kraken is British. Right. And we were thinking you could do a British accent or a German accent, but I think we want you to do a German accent. And I wasn't familiar with Whitehall and the Kraken at the time. So, I immediately acquiesced. In retrospect, I probably, and this is just thoughts down the road, I probably would have done it differently because I thought, if his name, I thought, because I remember in the first scene where I'm still in my Hydra SS gear, they call me Dr. Whitehall as opposed to Dr. Reinhardt or whatever. And I thought, it would have been interesting if you had a British guy working for the Nazis and Hydra. But the nature of TV, and this is my origin story for this character. The nature of TV is it's so quick. Most of my jobs, they call me and they go, can you be in New Orleans tomorrow? and wow. you're trying to create a character. And that, I remember this was the most harrowing because I take this very seriously and I love this world and I've always wanted to play a Marvel villain. It was nerve-wracking in the beginning to create a character while they're filming. Because the first scene we shot was where we present the obelisk and all of the soldiers have been, you know, turned into stone and Dum-Dum and Agent Carter come and arrest me, right?
By the way, I have to let you know, this is, it's definitely my top five Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. moment. It might be like top two or three. It's insane. It's insane because this is almost a direct sequel to the first Captain America movie.
Exactly. And I benefit, you know, and that was the other thing too, because I benefited from the world changing, because the second season of Agent S.H.I.E.L.D. was very different because it came after Winter Soldier. Sorry. Yeah. And exactly. So it was nerve wracking to have to create the character on screen because it was so quick. So I had to shoot the first scenes right away. So I think in retrospect, I probably would have fought and said, not fought. I don't mean that way. I mean, I would have lobbied
a little deeper.
To make him British, but there was no time. Right. And that's only in retrospect, because also the idea of doing a German accent is very exciting and it's good for a villain. And as I told you before, Red Skull was probably my favorite Marvel character at the time. And
so you had seen the movie, like you had seen Captain America First Avenger.
I had seen everything.
Okay. All right.
But then what happened was, because it was so quick, as I said, I had to go shoot stuff. And then I had like a week off before I had to shoot whatever my next scenes were. And I went to supervillain boot camp.
And what does that mean?
So I watched all the movies. I really, because I understood that I had to figure out who this guy was. What kind of villain was he? Where did he fit in the villains? Because, so we talk about Red Skull, the way Hugo Weaving played him, he was a villain, right? He was arch and he had an accent and he yelled and he did all these things. And I was like, well, he can't be that. He can't be that guy. And he can't be Loki. He can't be mischievous, sort of foppish evil. I have to find a place for him. And also, I have to find a place for him that will fit on a television screen. Because you can get away with bigger stuff in the movies that you're not going to get away with. You're going to look ridiculous shot in HD on a television. So I thought, okay, how can I pitch this guy? Literally, where does he fit in the sort of spectrum in the meter? And so, and it's interesting too. I always say right before Joss called me to do Much Ado About Nothing, I turned to my wife and I said, I don't know why the hell I went to Juilliard, because I'm never doing Shakespeare again. And then 2 weeks later, Joss sends an email. I'm doing Much Ado About Nothing. Would you like to be in it? And so my joke is, I feel like the Whedon family has made it their personal mission to make me use my Juilliard training, because I've used it more in stuff that they've done. So I had to use it for Much Ado About Nothing, obviously. But then for this character, I realized, oh, all those things that I learned those many years ago at Juilliard, I had to come up with a voice, I had to come up with a body, and I had to come up with I had to do physical stuff to really figure out who he was. So I remember what I sort of latched on to, because there was the compliance will be rewarded and all those things, I realized he's controlled. So his inner monologue is that at all times he's in control. And that's what he lives for. That's what he desires to be the head of Hydra, obviously, but at all times that he can control his own motions, that he can control everyone around him. And that's good, because that fits within a TV, but it still took time. I worked harder on this part than I've worked on any part in the last 20 years. Wow. But I like that, because I say there's two kinds of parts as an actor. This is my personal philosophy. There's parts where you go, I hope I can make it good, which is a lot of stuff that you often do on TV. And then there's the other one that you dream of, where you go, I hope I'm good enough. Mm. And this was one of those, I hope I'm good enough. And so I really...
Because the universe was so big.
Well, the universe is so big, but also you want to...
You want to honor it, and you also want to honor this piece, and you want to make something out of it. And so it's been nice to come back because, as I sort of alluded to earlier, it took me a while, and it was one of those where I'd go home and I go, I'm close, but there's more I want to work on. And I'd work on how he held his body and everything. And right when I felt I got it, I got that phone call and they go, hey, it's Marissa, it's Chad. Hey, Reed, we love everything you're doing, but we just want to let you know in the next script you die. And and I was like, and of course I faked it and I said, oh, of course, I totally understand. But I was devastated, right? Because I was hoping there would be more time because I go, I think I know who he is and I can't wait to do more of it. And then we'd really, you know, we'd had some great scenes and great directors. And I mean, it was so fun, but it was starting to get
lines, but I mean, even great lines, like the line, discovery requires experimentation.
Exactly. Discovery requires experimentation. I mean, it's such a, it's a good, and
as an actor, you have to see something like that and go, I can tear into that.
Oh yeah. And it was fun. And they were beautiful scenes when you're torturing, and the agent with the horrible Clockwork Orange, you know, pins and
you're so horrible. You're so evil.
Oh, and that's fun. It's so much fun. So, every time they call to come back, I'm so excited. And this year I was really, really excited to come back and do it again because the scenes were really good and they were really sick and gross, but also something we hadn't seen before. And
well, there's so many layers. I mean, this guy's like an onion. I mean, it's just like there's just layers you peel off. Well, look, you drove me right into one earlier, and I broke you off, but we're going to get back to it now. Peggy Carter, the great Haley Atwell, Dum Dum Dugan, Neil McDonald. This is literally coming right out of Captain America First Avenger. Yeah, it's pretty much a direct sequel to it. You got the importance of it, but can you just take us into that scene where you shot it?
Yes, I can. I can take you
going
right
into that.
This.
And then like, were you supposed to be on Agent Carter, the show?
Here's the deal. So
take us into that world. Cause before you die, I want to know how you lived.
I shot a small scene on a Friday, which was the scene with me and Simon, Bakshi, where it's just the end of that first episode where I turn around and reveal that I'm still the same age, but I have an American accent.
And it's modern day and you've got the same glasses
modern day.
And you're so like they close up on the glasses, which is brilliant.
Precisely. So then I left from the set, got into the town car, drove to Comic-Con, learned my accent. And then on Monday I came back to do the Nazi scene. Right. So 2 days later, I come back to do them breaking into the fortress and getting the obelisk and Dum Dum and Agent Carter. And so first of all, just a side note, surprisingly, this was my first SS uniform that I'd ever put on. Because with my coloring, I thought maybe I would have played that character before. But for many of my shows, I always wear a Hugo Boss suit when I play a lawyer or whatever, because I slip right into a Hugo Boss suit. Well, I slipped right into that SS uniform, but of course we know who designed it. It was Hugo Boss.
Oh, wow.
Designed them for the Nazi party based on the Massachusetts State Trooper uniform. But that uniform has a lot of bits and pieces, but it's made of wool. And so the one thing that I do remember about that first day, besides all of the little beautiful Marvelverse idiosyncrasies and things that went on, is it was 100 degrees. Three-digit 100 degrees. We're shooting somewhere down, I guess, like near Palos Verdes, right at the very end of Los Angeles on the coast at some old – I guess they must have had some old bunkers there. And
So that's not a set. That's a location.
Yeah. They were coastal bunkers, right? That they've been put in there for the Second World War.
It looks so good.
So we're shooting it and it is unbelievably hot. And it's my first day with the accent and everyone. I mean, it's basically, you know, the first week back to shooting the show of the second season. So everyone who's important is behind the monitor watching everything you do. Yeah. And this is how I differentiate professional acting from everyone who thinks you can act. The difference between a professional actor and, because I think most people can act, but I think the difference from a professional actor is when
everything is going against you, when it's 100 degrees, everyone is judging everything you do, and you are feeling very, very, very much under the microscope that you can actually still perform. and I go, because I would do a take, and I would go, I think that's, you know, I'm still trying to find the guy. But it was very exciting for me to have all those guys. Certainly Dum Dum, you know, I'm a Sergeant Fury fan, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And Neil and I are old friends. It was great to see Neil. And, you know, Agent Carter and Haley, she couldn't have been more lovely. And then luckily we got to do other scenes later. But I remember a surprising amount of that day for being so, I don't think terrified is the right word, but as an actor, I always call it, you have 1,000 first days of school. And this was definitely a first day of school, and then the pressure was on, and I was just, part of my character too is I don't want to let anyone down. I certainly, you know, I have a great love for Jed and Marissa too, and Joss. And so I wanted to make them all proud, but it was exciting to be part of it. It was funny too, because they made me loop, you know, where you redo the dialogue for that whole scene, because they felt the German accent was too thick. And the original one that I did, because I remember we had a German woman, the dialect coach on the set. She's like, "Oh, it's great. What you have done is so good." Yes. And I was like, "It's exactly right." And it was funny. And I went and they brought me into the ADR room, into the booth. And they go, "Look, you need to do this again because it's too thick. ABC wants you to like dial it down so it's more understandable."
Okay.
And,
so, well, like you said, in the films, you can probably get away with that. If that had been a feature, maybe.
You know.
TV, you got to dial it back a little bit.
You got to dial it back a little bit, except what I did is I just went in the booth and I did it exactly the same. And like, that's perfect. You know, which is always the thing. They go, "That's perfect." You know, you just, it's funny what people perceive. I remember I was doing a TV show and they go, "You know, my hair just started to get a little gray on the edges," which I love because it sort of changed my career. And I remember the producer was a good friend of mine. He goes, "You know what? We want you to take the gray out. So when you go on the trailer today, will you just have them cover it?" And I said, "Absolutely, absolutely." And I said to the hairstylist, I go, "Just, we're not going to cover the gray, but we just, when they ask, say, yes, I covered it." And I come out and he's like, "Did you cover the hair?" I go, "I did." He's like, "It looks great."
Oh,
I go,
wow.
"Fantastic." You know, but that's the nature.
They just want to know that you did.
Sometimes you have to, but so it was an exciting day to be part of it. It was a terrifying day. I don't think I remember feeling confident on the day that we did that, the torture scene where, you know, compliance will be rewarded. Discovery requires experimentation, where I'm turning the agent and she's coming along. And but it was also, I remember I knew that director, he and I are old friends. We worked together a million times. So I knew that if I sucked or was too over, because my fear, because you're trying, as I say, trying to pitch it, because you want to be, you're in a heightened reality, you know, in the Marvel verse. And I want to serve that. And you want to be a supervillain, but also you want to be as real as possible, because I think that's very compelling. And that's also my instinct, and that's my forte as an actor, is making characters believable and real. But it's so great to have come back, because as opposed to other roles, I still think about it all the time. And I still think, "Oh gosh, if I get another chance, here's what I'd like to do." And hence me thinking, "Oh gosh, if I had it all to do over again, the only thing I would have changed is I would have made him, to your question, more like the Kraken, and made him British, and thought about all that." But
well, that's the brilliant part of the Marvel universe, is that we get these flashbacks and we get these, you know, flash forwards and all these different things. Yeah. And so, and with your character, for those who haven't seen it yet, because of the experimentation, he's able to remain youthful forever. Was there a thought at the time that you were going to be on the Agent Carter show?
There was a thought in my mind that I would be on the Agent Carter show.
Okay, but that wasn't discussed with Jed.
No, it wasn't. Okay. I don't think they were, you know, they're separate teams, and but that was definitely my hope that I would be on that show. I knew once she locked me away and she said, "You're going to be in a cell and no one will ever see you again," that I thought, "Oh, I guess that's past." But that was definitely my hope, because I had friends on that show and I definitely want. And I was a big fan. And also staying in that world, staying in the 40s is a great, that's a dream come true as well. But no, that didn't happen. Not yet. It hasn't happened. But,
well, and hopefully maybe there'll be a return of Agent Carter, maybe some of these things. Again, that's the coolest thing about this character, is that you come back. You referenced the season 3 return in Paradise Lost. According to your character, nothing stays buried forever. We know that applies to your character as well.
Exactly.
Okay, so coming back then, so that was sort of a surprise, right, in season 3?
There was a total, it was a mitzvah. It was one of those things where suddenly I'm working on, I can't remember what I was working on another show and they go, hey, will you come? We would like to have her back. And I was absolutely. And it's exciting because first of all, beyond my love for the character, that's a great group of people, really amazing group of people. I love everyone there. And it's amazing. I went back this year again and all the crew is the same and the cast is the same. It's really a beautiful family. And that's something that's a Whedon gift, to keep, you know, make sure that the right people are there from the get go. And it's a lovely place to be. So it's a fun set to always come back to. And this one was really fun this time because it was just an interesting another iteration of this character in a school with, you know, the future of Hydra, under his tutelage.
Well, that's the thing. What were your thoughts when you saw, like, because you've seen all these things, they brought back Wolfgang von Strucker. I mean, like a younger version of the character, Jasper Sitwell. We thought we'd seen the last of Jasper. We get to see young Jasper Sitwell.
Right.
What were your, like, as a comic book nerd, what were your thoughts on, just like they're dropping these little things in all over the place. And that means like you could come back at any time.
Yeah, I hope so. Absolutely. I mean, I'm a Von Strucker, you know, it's like, that's amazing. And he was so iconic for me. And so it's really fun. And it's fun to put those glasses on and be that guy again. And then think about, and also the scripts are really good and they're layered and they're interesting and they have, obviously, they're written by people who are so well versed in the universe, and then they also have that just sort of that great sardonic humor, and they're just, it was a joy. I remember I was finishing up Designated Survivor, and I'm just looking at my scenes for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and I just couldn't wait to get to set and play them because they're. I mean, that's the thing: a bad guy and a super villain is that's an actor dream come true.
What was it like sharing the screen with Kyle MacLachlan? Because I know he seems like he's working on a different level.
He's amazing. And those were actually really great scenes. And he's so generous because he kept coming up with great bits where he would make himself more vulnerable. So he goes, just look at me and I'll be afraid of you. And I thought that's great because many actors won't do that. You know, oftentimes you'll get there and you'll be combating, instead of serving the scene, you might be combating the other actor's ego where they don't want to give you status, because the only way you can have status on screen or on the stage is if the other actors give you status. You can only be terrifying if other people are afraid of you. That's how it works. And he layered all of that in. So he understood that I would be above him and then he would come. He was delighted. And obviously I'm a huge fan of his. But every day on that set was always fun. All the actors are there to play and, you know, game to go. And many of them I've known for years and some I just met. I mean, the younger kids are amazing and so sweet and so talented. So that was a really fun place to be.
Can you give us some insight into, because I know when this all started and this is the scene where you appeared, season two beginning, it's connected to Captain America, the Marvel movie universe. And then for a while, we know the politics came in and Ike Perlmutter and Kevin Feige and all this crazy stuff went on. And the TV movie universes were separate and they're not connected at all. Now it seems like they are again. Now it seems like, so have they explained any of this to you? Like, could you pop up in a Marvel movie and like... Menace the Avengers or something, like, is that possible? Or like, do you understand any of that? Or is that above your pay grade?
It's so, Joe, it's so above my pay grade. I mean, you know, in my bed at night, I hold out fantasies. I go, hey, you know, maybe I could appear. But you have that moment, you go, I guess I blew it, right? I can't be in any of the other Marvel shows. So, you know, all that's left for me is DC, which is great. So the DC's still there. Because I always wonder, can I be on the Netflix Marvel shows? But not really, probably not. Right. I'm waiting to pop up in one of the movies, Joe. And if you talk to anybody,
I didn't know if you had any inside information on it. What don't we know about Whitehall / Reinhardt?
Besides the women's underwear. Because you know there has to be women's underwear. You know.
Oh, I'm just going to watch these episodes in a whole different way now.
Because you know they're like, I mean, that's the thing. Anyone who's that controlled.
You just went like Mel Brooks.
Oh, you know it.
You can just see.
I, I always pictured him underneath all those suits wearing like a very satiny, like super satiny pink pair of ladies' underwear.
You know,
because there's no one who can be into all that kink and be German. Sorry, German listeners.
Just alienated all the German listeners.
Oh my God. Have we alienated your
German? I think there's probably a big German contingency. Yeah. For Comic Book Central. Yeah.
I'm so sorry. No, I love the Germans. I kid. I mean, I think enough time has passed, but there's a little, look, I know what went on in Berlin. I know what's going on. They still have, you know, there's some burlesque shows there, and I use burlesque in the loosest of terms, that are pretty wild and slightly scatological. But I created a deviant personal world for him. Probably just for my own amusement. But I think that's all you need to know. But my daughter refers to him still as the Kraken. And she's holding out hope. She goes, are you going to come back as the Kraken? And I go, I hope so. And I put up a picture in the house as I was preparing him of the Kraken from the books in his full Kraken gear. And I thought, oh, I could pull that off with the helmet. The helmet will cover up any physical defects I may have. That's fantastic.
Discovery requires experimentation. I think you gave us a new definition of that.
Well, yeah, because you have to, like, you might have to do a little experimentation in the bedroom. You know what I'm saying, Joe?
I just went a whole different way. I can't watch these episodes again. I'm so sorry. What can we look forward to next? Look, you're dead on Designated Survivor. I'm sorry, spoiler alert, but for those that haven't seen it. But where can we see you in next?
I have... Well, as is befitting this entire conversation in the Marvelverse, I have some things I can't tell you about any of them right now,
yes.
But they're going to be really good. And I think they're going to bring me to some other conventions. So
yes,
it's all
a little
good.
Nerdy, a little.
Yes.
Comic booky, sci-fi-ish.
Scary. Yes.
Not all Stranger Things. You're on season 3 of Stranger Things. Somehow Whitehall is going to cross over.
Now that you've said it, it's going to happen.
Into the upside down. Those were the phone calls we were listening. They're like, pick up the phone. We need you on Stranger Things.
Oh, man. I'm going to have some very upset representatives in a few minutes.
I'm so sorry. No,
are good. It's very busy. But it's been, Joe, it's such a, I could talk to you forever. It's a pleasure.
This is fun. You're welcome anytime. Social media, Twitter. Instagram, Facebook, you're out there everywhere, right?
I'm out there everywhere. Facebook, I'm not, you know, Facebook, hello, I'm about to delete that account.
All right. Yeah, I know. It's getting crazy out there.
Everybody's just did that thing. The New York Times had that article today. Like, you can see who has your information. I saw who has all my information. I'm like, really? You have my information? It's interesting.
They had our information decades ago. I'm totally cool with it. I love the fact that Zuckerberg's out there and these guys are going, what is the Facebook? Is this a book of things? You know, and it's just the look on his face is like so patient with everybody.
Well, as they said, you know, as I do believe, you know, hail Hydra. And as they said in the movies, you can't handle your freedom. And apparently that's true.
Hydra has taken over. Is this what you're saying?
That's right. Well, that's what Zola said. You can't handle your freedom. And that's it.
Exactly,
you can't.
Right.
And that was the greatest thing going into just doing this last age. You know, when I first went on Age of Shield, that fact that Civil War came out. And Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
Because when you see that, where you go, now we've taken it to a whole nother level. Yeah. Hydra won.
I love Hydra. I love that it came back. I love that you came back. And we know we're going to see you again. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Absolutely.
Is one of the best shows. We know you're going to see you somewhere.
Love it.
Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Joe,
for being part of the Marvel TV and hopefully movie universe. That'd be cool.
Thanks, brother. It's been a pleasure.
Hail Hydra.
Hail Hydra.
Man, I love that interview. I really love that interview. Look, I typically do edit those things out when they do happen, but for this one I did tweak it a little bit, but honestly Reed was just so funny during those phone calls. I didn't want you listeners to miss out. That was some pretty fun stuff. And look, we reference it all the way through the conversation, so wouldn't have made sense if I'd taken it out. So look, he's not kidding when he's talking about rehoming his comic book collection. If you check out his Instagram page, And I'm going to put a link to all of his social media pages in the show notes so you can check it out there. But he's got Black Panther issue number one. He's got Ms. Marvel issue number one. I'm assuming they're part of the big sale. I don't know how he's going to go about doing this, but man, he's got some cool books that he's talking about selling. So you're going to want to check him out on social media. Look, I don't know if we can buy him or if it's going to auction. Who knows how that's going to happen, but I'm sure he's going to put that up there on his social media pages. One of my favorite aspects of doing the show is during the interview is gauging like the comic book cred of the guests. Sometimes it's high, sometimes it's low. I'd say on a scale of 1 to 10, you'd probably agree. Reed's, I'd say he's an 11 on the comic book scale. How cool was it that he referred to the preps that he was doing for his S.H.I.E.L.D. character as his origin story? That's only a comic book guy is going to say that, right? Okay, he's a total comic book guy. Hope we see him back in the world of comic books coming to life very soon. I did check back with him. This interview, all those phone calls, he didn't answer. Apparently that didn't take him away from his latest gig, so that's pretty cool. Something horror genre fans will be happy with, from what I'm told. Again, keep an eye on his social media pages. Follow him around social media. I'm sure we're going to get more details as he can make them available. Again, check out the show notes on my website, comicbookcentral.net, blogtalkradio.com/comicbookcentral. All the links are there. Huge, Hydra-sized thanks to Reed Diamond for stopping by today and geeking out with all of us. That was fun. While you're following Reed on social media, be sure to follow Comic Book Central there as well. Facebook.com/Comic Book Central Network. Don't forget the network, get the right one. Twitter @ComicBookCTRL. The links are on my website, so you can make sure you get them. There's also a link to subscribe to the show on iTunes. If you haven't subscribed yet, please do so you don't miss an episode. Trust me, you don't want to miss a moment of what is headed your way. Good stuff coming. Please share the Lair on social media. Share the Facebook posts. Retweet them on Twitter. I always appreciate it when you do that. If you have a moment or two, leave a review in iTunes. If you're grooving on what I'm sending your way, if you're grooving on chats like we just had with Reed Diamond Man, send a review over there on iTunes. I really appreciate that. And drop me a line, the Signal Me tab on the website, or you can shoot me an email, joe@comicbookcentral.net. I want to hear from you. All right, kids, that is it for today. But like a Hydra agent, I'm never gone for long. In fact, I will be back in one short week because next week on Comic Book Central, you know how much we're celebrating super anniversaries right here on Comic Book Central. 80th anniversary for the character of Superman, 40th anniversary for Superman the movie. Well, next week you are going to be hearing from Kal-El himself. He hoisted a truck over his head in the first flick. He almost learned Superman's secret identity in Superman 3. And he showed up with the latest Man of Steel in Man of Steel. Toddler Kal-El, actor Aaron Smolinski, he's going to fly in to celebrate the 40th anniversary of Superman the movie with us. Look, we want you here. The celebration's here. We want you here as well. Until then, keep on the lookout for those Hydra agents. Keep reading those comics. Don't sell them. And thanks for joining me here in the Lair, Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Comic Book Central. All other content and names are registered trademarks and copyrights of their respective holders.
Worst episode ever. Rest assured that I was on the internet within minutes, registering my disgust throughout the world.